Hello and welcome back to episode 24 of From the Archives. My name's Matthew Wooden. I'm the Chief Archivist at Haileybury. Today we're speaking with Dr. Andrew Viney. Let's get straight into it. I'm joined today by Dr. Andrew Viney, who is writing a book about Haileybury's founder, Charles Henry Rendall. How are you, Andrew?
Very well, thanks, Matt. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us, Andrew. Of course, a lot of people at Haileybury don't know a whole lot about Charles Henry Rendall, but I'm really excited to ask you a couple of questions. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about Rendall's family background?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was interested in sort of getting the backstory with Rendall in the sense, you know, we know he's the founder of Haileybury in Melbourne in 1892, but for most of us, that's about all we know about him. And, you know, we know that he made a real impact as a classics teacher or a teacher of Latin and Greek, more specifically. And that out of all those schools that were opening in Melbourne in the 1890s, you know, what was it about Rendall that meant that his school survived when so many went to the wall at that time? So I was really interested to try to dig into that backstory, which, you know, before he came to Melbourne, to try and learn something about that background. So he had a reasonably privileged background in the sense that his father was the rector of St Andrew's Church in Great Rollright in West Oxfordshire.
Yes.
Which is, you know, it's an interesting area. It's a little bit off the beaten track. I mean, it's not far from Oxford, so I mean, it's not that, by Australian standards, it's not off the beaten track, but nevertheless, it's a bit of a backwater. And the interesting thing was that as rector, Henry Rendall, that's Rendall's father, Charles's father,
yes,
was very much looked at as a, you know, maybe the leader of the local community. You know, there was no sort of major aristocrat in that part of Oxfordshire. So that, you know, the rector of Great Rollright was a big wheel in that small world.
Yes.
And I think that it had a big influence on all the boys, because, you know, Charles was one of nine boys growing up. So that family background, I think, is also important in terms of being... He's the eldest of all those nine siblings.
And that's set him up financially, or his family financially, to be in a situation where they're able to attend some important schools in England.
Well, precisely. So, you know, sending nine boys to... You know, essentially elite schools is not cheap, and therefore the rector, what was good financially about this position was that there was a lot of land around Great Rollright, which was owned by Brasenose College in Oxford,
right,
and the income from that would all go to the rector. So he didn't own a lot of land in his own right, but he nevertheless had that income. So when Charles was growing up, for example, the family, according to the censuses of those times, you know, typically the family had about six servants, domestic servants,
yes,
in the house. So certainly it was quite, you know, quite a privileged upbringing. And yeah, Charles was obviously the eldest boy, and you know, the first to leave home to go to a boarding school. And that boarding school was relatively new, as it was then,
yes,
Haileybury College in Hertfordshire.
Outstanding. And, of course, you know, it's a long and storied life. What are some of the gaps in the Rendall story? What are some of the things that we don't know?
Well, so that's really interesting. I've got a bit maybe obsessed, but, you know, really interested in what happens to Rendall after he leaves Oxford. So even though there's not a lot of detail about his schooling and his university years, nevertheless, we can, you know, pretty much piece that story together.
Right.
In terms of his health seems to have become a factor during his time at Haileybury. So around 1873, so this is when Charles is 16 going on 17, it seems that the health problems, the asthmatic problems, as they seem to be, started to affect him. And the first bit of medical advice was to seek out a warmer climate, which the first one he found was Bristol, which may not seem
not warm
like
enough.
The tropics, but yes. Of course the effects of the Gulf Stream were important there. So it was certainly different from, say, Oxfordshire or Hertfordshire, which were both inland. So he moved to Clifton College at Bristol, and I've had a little bit of contact with the Alumni Association at Clifton College. So we're getting a sense of those last couple of years of Rendell's secondary schooling at Clifton College. And from there, he was able to go on to Oxford. But then, again, his health seems to have been a factor in terms of his preparations for his final exams at Oxford. So he ends up with a third-class degree, which I think was a bit of disappointment to him. Mm. I don't know. I mean, it must have been to the family in general, I suppose, but it seemed to be more that it was Charles' own expectations that he felt that he was disappointing.
And, of course, he's got some, very successful siblings,
Yeah, well, that's right.
So
even at that point...
The sibling rivalry.
That's right. So even,
there.
Even because he's the oldest, the youngest haven't yet shone as much as they're going to. It's already clear that there's a lot of talent there amongst the boys. And, so Charles... And, of course, in the end, Charles is the only member of the family to go to Haileybury. Four of the other boys go to Harrow and four to Rugby, which really were more prestigious schools at the time. Many of them won scholarships. So... and then went on to typically to Cambridge and Oxford. So... So I think Charles felt very disappointed about this third-class degree. And so a couple of interesting things happened to him after that in 1879. So he becomes involved with his uncle's election campaign.
Right.
So Horace Davey was his mother's brother, and he stood as a Liberal candidate in Christchurch, which was in Hampshire. And apparently Rendell got really involved with this and made campaign speeches and really was very involved in Davey's campaign.
It's quite different to other parts of his life. When you look at, the course of his life and his academic focus, a bit of a deviation.
I'm curious, how much Rendell got caught up in that, because it was a successful campaign. Mm-hmm. Presumably there could have been some position for Charles in London, now that Horace Davey's a member of Parliament. So, is it for health reasons that, London, would that be the worst place for Charles to have gone with his asthmatic condition?
But then, of course, things take a dramatically different direction, and which brings me to my next question. Why is it that Rendell decides to pack up and shift to Australia?
Well, yeah, so we're getting to that in terms of, again, his health seems to be a big factor. And this is the other interesting part about this period. So at the same time that he's working on Davey's election campaign in 1880, that's early 1880 that election happened, he's, according to, other writers who've looked into Rendell's history, he taught, the census, the 1881 census is really the information I think everyone's been going on here, which says that he was assistant master at the College Bournemouth, or Boscombe, actually, which is just to the east of Bournemouth. Today it's a suburb of Bournemouth, but was kind of a separate village still in that at that time. Problem is, in terms of trying to connect that with any particular educational institution in and around Bournemouth at the time, the college is not a very specific title,
right.
And it's not really clear what it could have been. So really still trying to piece that together. I'm in touch with the Historical Society from that area to see if they can sort of throw any light on, is this right? Because it was the other factor is that what we can establish about Bournemouth at the time is that it's huge as a medical resort.
Right.
So it's pretty...
It's a focus in its life, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's very... It would be the number one place in terms of treating people with lung conditions in England at the time. So there's a lot of focus at the time in terms of climate and its relationship to respiratory conditions. So Bournemouth was clearly big in the UK, and of course there was also a lot of advice in terms of where else you could move to. Mm. So some fascinating detail in terms of what the medical thinking was at the time, and some interesting comments about Melbourne. So certainly there was a school of thought that Melbourne, Sydney, Hobart were all places that would be better for someone with a condition like Rendell's. Mm-hmm. But there's also some mixed reports. So I'm looking forward to putting some of those in that chapter in terms of some of the observations on the variable climate in Melbourne are quite interesting.
And he's really taken the plunge. I mean, it's the other side of the world. It's a long, long journey in those days.
Very slow. That's right.
And he set up shop in Melbourne and taken on some important roles. What do we know about that initial period when he settled in Melbourne? Those first 10 years.
Yeah, well, he really seems to have made an impact very quickly. So possibly, he had good recommendations. Maybe if we learn more about what he was doing in Bournemouth, that would help to flesh that out. But, certainly his father, Henry, had very good contacts at Oxford. So that might also have helped. But somehow, Rendell very quickly is teaching Latin and Greek at Melbourne Grammar and at Trinity College, Melbourne. And very quickly establishing a reputation.
A reputation that he'll go on to rely on in establishing.
Oh, yeah, very much so. That's exactly right. So those first 10 years are very important, actually, in terms of that. Rendell very much has a name when he founds Haileybury in 1892. Of course, there's the controversy at Trinity College. Involving the warden Alexander Leeper. So that's going to be an interesting part of the story, I think, in terms of how Rendell got himself embroiled in that.
The uprising.
The uprising, exactly.
The handsome cabs,
the 30 handsome cabs arriving to take the students away from Trinity College, all in black, black handsome cabs, all the students dressed in black. So at least in part, that protest was about Rendell's dismissal. Because in some way he seems to have advocated for the students against Leeper, and Leeper was not used to that or expecting any of that from his staff. So
it sounds like a very civilized way to host a revolution.
Well, it does. It does. But yeah, interesting time, and potentially damaging, of course, to Rendell. But it's clear that there were very much two sides. In this whole Leeper dispute, and there was quite a sectarian element to it. Mm. So
and a lot of support for Rendell.
Well, a lot of support for Rendell, exactly, including importantly from Dr. Alexander Morrison, the longtime and famous headmaster of Scotch College. So he was very quick to employ Rendell. And so it was actually at the last couple of years before Rendell starts his own school in Brighton, he's actually got this special class at Scotch that Morrison himself would have otherwise taken. So it shows the regard in which he was held, that Morrison would actually pass this class on to Rendell.
And a lot of trust there.
Absolutely.
Underpinning that.
Absolutely. So clearly, it seems like that Rendell having fallen out with Morrison actually was a plus in Morrison's eyes. So he appears to have had quite a personal animosity with Leeper himself. So
it's a life full of surprises, isn't it?
Look, yeah.
Thank you so much, Andrew, for sharing those insights, and I look forward to catching up again soon to hear more about Rendell.
All right, been a pleasure, and look, I hope to be able to fill in some of those gaps shortly.
A big thanks to Andrew for his contributions today. Keen listeners will recall that our musical interludes are recorded by Kim Baston on the Schimmel Grand Piano in the Bradshaw Chapel. Thanks so much for listening today, and we hope you join us again next time.